B-Pod Studios.
Drive home with Felger and Matt this afternoon at 2. Right now, this is how Boston sports fans start the day. Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub, and it's Toucher Rich, Joe Murray, John Wallach, and I'm sorry, I have to completely derail everything for a moment because I saw a story this morning that I can't understand the logic behind any of it. I'm trying to understand, and maybe John and maybe Joe, you can try to put some sense into me. Why I'm not reading between the lines when it comes to what I'm seeing here. So, I guess the new hot thing is to do director's cuts of movies and to put them out the way that you originally wanted it without the studio meddling and everything. Like millions upon millions of dollars were spent trying to polish the turd that was the Justice League movie that I guess came out years ago. You know, that whole thing with Zack Snyder and Superman and Batman. And I guess like in the middle of the whole thing, Zack Snyder, the director, who's not a very good director at all, ended up having some family emergency. He had to leave, so they got the guy who did the Avengers, Joss Whedon, to come in and fix it all, and it ended up being just a big pile of crap. Well, it was no surprise because Batman versus Superman was crap. Blah, blah, blah. Now I'm getting nerdy. But the bottom line is, HBO spent like millions upon millions of dollars to let the director go in and basically recut everything. So this is the new hot thing. Sylvester Stallone has announced that he is doing a director's cut of one of my all-time favorite movies, Rocky IV. Everyone loves Rocky IV.
More music. Yep. More training videos. We want more.
Rocky IV, I have said, is the most watchable of all the Rockies. It's my favorite Rocky.
Not
if it's on TV, you don't change the channel. Now, Rocky I is obviously the more prestigious of films. It won all of the Oscars. It's a legitimate, well-written movie with a great plot and great acting and great all of that stuff. I think Rocky I might be the last Rocky movie that I want to watch if it's on TV. It's depressing. Once you've seen it, you're fine with it. And there's not enough of those moments you're like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I don't care about his romance with what's her name?
Adrian.
With Adrian, unless she's getting like a thing for her wrist that says, it might look like a snake, but it's not going to bite you. Because that's in Rocky IV, which has all of the best lines. So
I don't know. Rocky III, Mr. T has a lot of good lines in that movie.
That's the second most watchable.
No,
Rocky III, I argue, is the second most watchable.
I would flip it. Rocky III is more watchable than Rocky IV. But anyway, we digress.
Man, yes. Man versus Machine with Drago. Okay, I'll give you, it's probably, you know, one or the other. But Rocky IV is my personal favorite. But he's doing a director's cut, he announced. And I was like, I don't know if you need to mess with perfection. And since he's announced that he's doing it, he went on Instagram and there's a picture of all of them. And you know, it's got like him and Drago and everything. And he put, for the 35th anniversary of Rocky IV, it's getting a new director's cut by me. So far, it looks great. Soulful.
Oh,
it's got a lot of soul. He said, thanks you for MGM for this opportunity to entertain. Now, Rocky IV is, I think, 90 minutes long. And I think 70 minutes of it is a music video. I mean, it's Hearts on Fire. There's a part of that movie.
No Easy Way
Out. There's 15 minutes, which might have 13 and a half minutes of music, because it starts off, you know, they get to Russia and he starts training and it's him running around the mountain. It's it's man versus machine. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, Drago's doing it with all the machines and the steroids, and Rocky's running up mountains and Russians are running after him. And then for maybe 45 seconds, Adrian shows up in Russia and he goes, I know you're gonna be here. And he goes, I love you. And then it's Hearts on Fire.
Yeah.
And then that kicks in. And that's another music video immediately after that. It's like 15 minutes of music video with maybe 45 seconds of dialogue. So while all of this was going on, apparently a bunch of fans were commenting underneath this Instagram, and Stallone was actually talking back. And somebody said, wow, cool. Does it expand on the relationship between Paulie and his robot? And we all, of course, remember the really creepy sex robot that Paulie had. I'm not saying that's what it was used for, but it was insinuated that. And Sylvester Stallone tweeted back, "The robot is going to the junkyard forever. No more robot."
What?
What?
You can't do that.
So somebody put, "Don't cut the robot," and he said, "I don't like the robot anymore."
How do you cut out
one of the most 80s scenes of one of the most 80s movies of all time out of the movie?
It might be literally the only
comic relief in the movie is that Paulie is like he gets this robot, and he's like, "What am I going to do with a robot?" And all of a sudden, the next scene, he's talking, and the robot's talking like a female voice. He's like, "She loves me." Well, that's because you turned it into a sex robot.
It talks that thing.
I want a sports car, not a walking trash can. So, like, they're going to take that out of the entire movie. And, like, people are, like, lobbying for him to keep the robot in the movie. He doesn't, I think, understand how important the robot was to the greatness of that film. So, I don't know what we need to do as a show to lobby to make sure that that does not change. But how dare you F with the robot in Rocky IV, which, once again, is the best of all Rocky movies. I think it goes in this order. I think it goes 4. Now, this is like in just like enjoy, just enjoyment. Because someone's going to say, "Well, you know, Rocky 1 won all these things." I think it goes Rocky 4, and then it goes Rocky 3. And then maybe you've got to go. I'll go Rocky 2. Rocky 2 is really good.
Already you're wrong.
Would you say Creed?
No. Were you including Creed? Okay.
I guess you could include Creed.
Okay. So for me, it's 3, then it's Creed, then it's 4. And then it's 1.
No, you put Creed in front of Rocky 4?
I do. For enjoyment, yes.
I like Rocky 4 because it's just quick.
Yeah, right. It's quick.
You know?
Right. And, you know, and there's the speech.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
If I could change, I mean, come on. How ridiculous is that? Of course that's the best. I mean,
if I can change,
я думаю, что каждый тоже изменился.
And you can change.
Вы можете измениться.
Everybody can change.
And then, of course, the slow-mo, fist in the air, freeze frame as the credits roll. Come on, dude. How did you put Creed ahead of Rocky IV?
I was online. I saw Rocky IV on opening night. No one wanted to see that movie more than me. But I'm telling you.
Dude, you were 50.
That's why I saw it in the theater. Creed does it for me more than Rocky IV does.
Creed's a great movie.
Yes.
I've never seen Creed 2.
You know what?
I know that
I have seen it, but you know what? I didn't go see it in the theater. I just saw the last fight scene on like YouTube after they downloaded it. It's not good.
Maybe there's like a bunch of build-up and, you know, lead-up. Maybe the fight meant more. Come on. It's like you went right to the money shot. You don't do that.
That's my fault then. I'm clearly missing out. This is why there's going to be a third one. Oh, that's right. There's not going to be another one.
Maybe there is. Who knows? Yeah, it goes probably 4-3-2 Creed. And then 5 for, like, just the laughs.
No.
Like 5 makes me laugh,
no,
dude.
No,
it's like,
oh,
does it help
no.
you rock? Was it no pie-eating contest?
One
I mean,
is
come on, that
great.
One's pretty good.
I loved 1. That's because I'm old enough to remember it. But I loved 1. I thought the first Rocky was very good. Now, not in the top 3, but I liked Rocky 1 a lot.
Okay, so what was the one that was not the last one where
Rocky
there was
Balboa?
The one,
that one?
Yeah, no, is it Rocky Balboa, the one that was awful, except it has the best speech of all of the movies?
That's Rocky 5. That's Balboa.
Balboa.
That's
Balboa.
It's Balboa. It's the one speech about how hard life, how life hits you. It's how you hit.
It's not how hard you get hit. It's how hard you get hit and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Like, it's like out of a crap movie, that is might be one of the best like scenes of any Rocky film. That speech right there. Like, that might be that's one of like an all-time movie speech, that one right there, which was phenomenal. That's like the movie White Chicks, which sucked except for the parts with Terry Crews where he just absolutely killed
it. I just didn't like how like the girl that he walked home in Rocky 1. Little Jean, whatever her name
came
was.
Back.
Yeah,
Maria.
Marie.
Came back in Rocky.
Like, when did that fit into that storyline?
Fighters fight.
Spider Rico's doing the dishes.
That's right. Fighters fight. Rock. That was her big line.
And the guy from This Is Us is his kid. Like, I don't know.
Oh yeah,
Milo.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor. If you get a chance, check out Rocky V again. It's pretty funny.
Oh, I just saw
Tommy
it recently.
Morrison, man. That
I just saw it recently. Yeah.
Yeah. Tommy Morrison, not a very good actor. Not really good at all.
The Don King kind of guy.
Touch me and I'll sue. Yeah. Sue me for what?
George Washington Duke. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was that his name?
Yeah.
Jeez, you have really seen
it. I have seen it recently.
The checks are good in that. Rocky, late 80s. You know, remember the girls that were Tommy?
Yeah.
The Christmas didn't go very well.
Tommy had to beat Union Kane for the title first, though.
Yeah. Right now I want to go back and watch it.
Now, this is what's called flexing, ladies and gentlemen.
Five is very watchable. It's really bad. I mean, it's really bad. And you know what? I'd rather watch that than Rocky One. As I said, Rocky One, great movie. I don't want to watch it again. It's depressing.
You and Fred are together on this. I liked Rocky One, but again, I was alive for the beginning of all of this. And you guys weren't, so maybe that's
the
difference.
Streets of Philadelphia, yeah. So you know, you have that in common.
Right.
All right. Let's talk to Jeff Howe. Jeff Howe is covering your Patriots, and camp is over, and let's get his opinion on how he thinks things are going to shake out. We'll get to that right after this.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
What's up? Toucher.
Our only concern is your condition.
Rich.
Oh, this guy's a piece of work, huh?
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. We got Joe Murray and John Wallach back in studio after a luxurious vacation where his back was thrown out for the majority of the time. And with us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline from The Athletic, guy who's been out there for keeping an eye on all these practices and all the interviews and everything with the Patriots and answering all the questions, Mr. Jeff Howe, who we have with us. Jeff, there's no question, right? Cam Newton is going to be the guy. There's really never been a question, has there?
Well, I mean, it's up for interpretation. I think there's the cynics would say this was Cam Newton's job all along. I mean, it's my job. Like you were saying, I was at all these practices. The first three practices, it was a nearly completely even split between Newton, Stidham, and Hoyer in terms of reps. And honestly, Stidham got a slight tick more of the quality reps than Newton through those first three. But the fourth practice was when Newton really started to solidify himself as the guy. That was at the end of a stretch when Stidham had seven interceptions in a span of three practices. Stidham also started to feel the effects of a minor hip injury on that day. It was Thursday out at Gillette. And that's when Newton, for the first time, commanded the vast majority of the reps, and he hasn't looked back since. I mean, since that fourth practice, he has basically monopolized all of the quality reps of practice. He's had more opportunities to throw in team drills, and he's the guy.
I know it's been a short period of time, but do you see that just during these practices, he's, I guess, been able to build any sort of chemistry, or is a receiver that you have found is his favorite go-to guy, or what does it look like as far as his relationship with these receivers right now?
Yeah, him and Edelman have something that's growing, and Mohamed Sanu had a good day with Cam yesterday. I think they might have connected four times. So, you know, those look like the top two, which you would expect. From there, I mean, he's got a pretty wide distribution of the football. I mean, early in camp, he had some moments when he was checking down quite a bit. I mean, him and Burkhead have been on the same page a lot in the passing game. Damian Harris has been a go-to at times, although maybe not as much over the last week. But I think over the last week, what you've seen is Newton try to push it downfield to the receivers a bit more and get away from some of those running backs. I don't know how much of that is comfort in the system, which is certainly possible, or if it's just a coaching point to say, hey, you know, try to, you have the thing with the running backs. So let's try to work in some more receivers. He's looked good at times with the rookie tight ends, Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene. Both of those guys look the part. Asiasi had a bit of a setback this week with a little minor ankle injury. Started to get closer to full tilt yesterday. But, you know, Asiasi and Newton, I think, had something budding before that. But, you know, overall, he's completed almost 65% of his passes in team drills. You know, for reference, Brady used to, over the last 4 years, have completed 69% in practice. So that's, you know, not too far off of where you would have Brady. And the other part of it is it's hard to truly assess a guy like Cam Newton in practice because, you know, they're not scrambling. And you can't hit the quarterback. There's no live contact or anything like that. So there have been times when the offensive line is broken down for big stretches and Newton's faced a ton of pressure. And you would think a good chunk of those would have been sacks, but you just never know what types of plays the Cam Newton could make with his feet and his legs and stuff like that.
One of the reasons we have you on, Jeff, and there are many reasons, is A, you know the percentage of completion rate for Tom Brady in team drills for the last 4 years. I mean, that pulling that number out like on the fly is amazing in itself. But another reason is because you've seen the chemistry built up between Newton and the wide receivers, and the one guy you really didn't touch on is the one guy that could really be a wild card in this offense, N'Keal Harry. Harry's been in and out of practice. There's been a lot of debate about how effective he's going to be this year. And the physical skills are obviously there, but he's having trouble staying on the field. What is your overall feeling about him now that we're about 2 weeks away from the beginning of the NFL season?
You got to see a lot more consistency out of him. And I think if anybody is happy that Cam Newton won the job than the others, it's N'Keal Harry. Because I think Newton was 7 of 9 when throwing to Harry in the last 2 weeks, which is decent. It's not superb or anything like that, but I think Brian Hoyer was like 2 of 12 when throwing to Harry. I mean, those guys have no chemistry at all. So it's probably nice for Harry to have a guy like Newton throwing to him. But there have been good stretches. You know, yesterday he made a ridiculous catch from his knees and he slipped and kind of like propelled himself forward to catch a Cam Newton pass after falling down without ever hitting his feet in the middle of the field. I mean, he does things like that to make you say, wow. And then there are other times when, you know, he shook J.C. Jackson, 4 or 5 days ago in the back of the end zone to the point where N'Keal Harry, I mean, he ran the route so great that N'Keal Harry was the only guy on that side of the field on the back of the end zone. But when Newton delivered the ball to him, he inexplicably forgot where he was and stepped out of bounds before completing the catch, which was just like, you look at that, you're like, what is going on here? You know, you got to finish that play. You know, there are plays when, you know, yesterday it was a Stidham ball up the left sideline against J.C. Jackson, typical back shoulder type of throw that you would see for a guy like Harry, and, you know, clanged off his hands, and it would have been a tough catch, but those are the types of catches the Patriots need N'Keal Harry to make. You know, he needs to make those tough catches on a more consistent basis. And then, you know, he got off to a good start in camp. He had 6 catches the first 2 practices and was kind of leading the way there. And then he missed 3 practices with an undisclosed injury. He, you know, had to get taped up at one point early last week in the middle of a practice and, you know, then came back. So you need to see him on the field more consistently and you need to see him finish more of these plays consistently.
Okay, so Jeff, I don't know what the scenarios were for each one of these, but I'm a stats guy, much like you, and I'm looking at stats here. And apparently, they brought in Nick Folk, and I guess he's made 17 of 20 field goals over the last week. And I'm Justin Rohrwasser, the guy obviously who came in here who was a bunch of news about his tattoos and stuff, but he's only made 11 of 20.
Two words, Rich, practice squad. That's okay. Where he's going to wind up.
I don't know if they're trying to get him to kick like, you know, 55-yarders or something, but 11 out of 20 doesn't sound – that sounds like he sucks. So what's going on there?
Yeah, he has had – he's been dealing with some type of minor injury, and that was the impetus for bringing in Folk. But,
okay.
I mean, just the first week of camp – Rohrwasser was 3 of 5 on the very first practice. And then we didn't see him kick again for a full week. It was until Folk's first day 1 week later. And it was because of that injury situation. But injury or not, I mean, 11 of 20 over the last week isn't going to get it done. And you can sugarcoat some of them. Like, if you want to put an asterisk, yeah, he was short on a 54-yarder yesterday. It was windy. And there was one that was blocked yesterday, and you kind of, you know, maybe blame the line. But even then, you throw those two out, would you be happy with 11 of 18? So this is not an ideal start for the rookie. And Folk has been as steady as you would expect him to be. And he's shown that Folk has also shown that he's capable of hitting from 50. And, you know, that's, I think, a positive development. I don't know if that length will carry into the New England winter here or anything like that. But there's been no question who's been the better kicker. And even some of the times when you watch Rohrwasser kick, you know, kind of off to the side by himself with a tee or whatever, just not the live field goal situations that we were tracking, the ball sometimes just comes out looking like a frisbee, and there's not a lot of consistent contact. So I don't know what's going to happen over the next five practices before cutdown day, but Rohrwasser is going to need to be like monumentally good in order to beat out Folk at this point.
All right, so this past Friday, there was the scrimmage that they had inside the stadium, and I still don't know what the standard is going to be when it comes to crowd noise in each of these places. There was that quote that Pete Carroll had thrown out there last week about wanting it to be loud enough just to, you know, there be enough noise to confuse other teams, or I'm paraphrasing him, and I'm probably doing a poor job, but the way he was speaking, it almost sounded like the coaches had some sort of say in the volume of crowd noise that's going to be pumped in. Have you learned anything about what the standard is going to be, who's going to control that, and how they dealt with that Friday at their scrimmage?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because the media, we were sitting in the stands, so you could hear it, and they've practiced with it a couple times too. So it's at the first time they practiced with it, I was like looking up overhead. I'm like, is there a jet coming? It was the weirdest sound ever because I'd never heard
it. That loud? It was that loud? Like, where you thought it might be a jet?
No, in the sense that it was just weird to hear.
Oh, like, okay, I see.
I mean, it was loud, but it wasn't, like, deafening or anything like that. It was like a mixture of white noise with, like, an occasional person screaming and clapping, and it's bizarre. It takes a bit to get used to. But the one thing I have seen is the league wants to settle on, you know, it's the same volume, or basically you're not controlling the volume throughout the day, you know, in order to give one team a distinct advantage. But I'm not sure if that's something that they're negotiating or they have to kind of figure out a rule at some point in the next 2 weeks, because it's weird. And then you still have some teams that are going to allow about a quarter full of the stadium of live human being fans. So I don't know how you kind of mix in the two there. It's kind of a weird situation. But, I mean, in the stadium, it sounded better, but, you know, the other side of that is I haven't sat in the stands for a football game in a long time. So, and the ones that I have been UMass games, and there's been like 40 people at those. So it's kind of strange.
Well, we were talking about that. Like, you know, how like Miami, I guess, is going to let in, I think, like 13,000 or something like that. And I was like, anybody been to a Revolution game? Can someone tell us maybe what that sounds like? But, yeah, I don't know how they're going to control, like, you know, what the standard's going to be and, you know, what kind of shenanigans. All I know is that Ernie Adams is already figuring out a way to get some sort of advantage. Subliminal messages, I think, that he would put in over the loudspeaker somewhere underneath the crowd noise. All right. Well, Jeff Howe from The Athletic, great stuff. And, we'll talk to you again next week. Appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, here is Joe Murray with your headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
A Sports Hub. This is the home of the Bruins, the Celtics, and these guys, Toucher and Rich, on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Down the line.
Whoa.
Hit that one wickedly.
A little hesitation move.
That ball's gone.
And that ball is out of here.
That's a little hookage.
A wicked shot by Rafael Devers down the line into the corner. And a home run.
He better stay back. Stay back. He just let it fly, hit a bullet. And we couldn't tell once again. I mean, I thought it was a dead foul. It must have hooked quickly. But that ball was scalded.
All right. 98.5 of Sports Hub. We got Joe Murray and John Wallach in studio. And almost as much of a bummer as the Bruins being at the brink of elimination is that now I think it's official, John, according to your math, that the Red Sox can no longer be the worst team of all time. Is that correct?
No, they if they win four, on how many games they have left? I think they...
You said if they won 10 games.
No, 16.
They would...
16. If they win...
10 more games. Okay.
Yeah, so 10 more.
So if they win 16 or less,
yeah,
they can be the worst Red Sox team of all time?
Correct, but they've won 6 out of 10 here. So, I think they have to go 4-22 the rest of the way in order to do it, or something like that. I don't know. How many games have they played?
Yeah, I don't like that.
How many games have they played?
If they're going to suck, I want them to be historic.
I know. Me too. I mean, why else? What else are we doing here? I mean, if you really want to make this team bad, let's do it, man. I mean, let's make them epically bad.
And now there's a less of a reason to watch it because the Wallachhead's officially gone. We're in the second half of the season, and I got an email.
Right.
I only paid for the first half, so the Wallachhead is not there anymore. So now I've really just got no reason to watch them. I don't want them to, unless they're historically bad. Yeah. And if they win one here and they win one there, that's just not any fun anymore. And now they've gotten rid of actually one of their better players, Mitch Moreland. He's going to the San Diego Padres. They got back, what, like a third baseman and an outfielder? I don't see the word pitching in there anywhere.
No, the deal brought back, apparently these two prospects have high upside, and for a guy, a 36-year-old first baseman on a one-year contract, it's pretty good. So, I mean, this trade and the trade involving Hembree and Workman both got good reviews, but the Hembree and Workman trade got two pitchers back. Mm. And today is the trade deadline at 4 o'clock, which is what I assume you're headed towards, Rich. And ultimately, the Red Sox should sell off 4 or 5 guys today and get as much minor league pitching as you possibly can. And if you get a back-end starter that has controllability and a guy that can be here next year, God bless. But
chances the Red Sox blow the trade deadline. Joe Murray.
Oh, 80%. I mean, they just said they're not going to trade Bogarts, J.D. Martinez, or Bradley. Bradley should be gone.
Why in the world? See, I don't understand this club's, and this is a new GM now.
Do they have arbitration for next year or anything?
Fascination. No. Doesn't matter what kind of controllability. This guy shouldn't be here. You have guys that can play that position. If you trade Bradley, then you keep Pilar and have him play center field. Pilar, pretty damn good defensive outfielder while he was in Toronto and
Verdugo
has shown some
maybe
pop.
Could play there at
maybe
some
Verdugo
point.
Can play center field. This is the least of your problems. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about superior defense in the outfield. You're not going to contend for a couple of years here.
But I think they can get something for him.
Yes.
Like a guy that can
some
pinch
sucker
hit,
that hasn't watched Bradley when he's in one of his 0-for-27 tailspins. Yeah. I'm sure there's at least one GM out there. I mean, why not? You know, you can tell him he was the MVP of the ALCS in 2018. This guy, you know, it was 14-for-28 and really carried our team through a stretch in July. I mean, stretches like that got J.D. Drew a huge contract for this team. Why in the world can you not trade Jackie Bradley Jr.? I don't understand this organization's fascination with him. In the end, there are about 7 or 8 untouchables on this team, starting with Bogarts, and you have Devers, and you know J.D. Martinez, maybe Verdugo. The only pitcher on this entire major league staff that I would keep is Darwinson Hernandez, who is a homegrown kid who's got an electric arm. He's having trouble throwing hard these days, but I would keep him.
And he had Corona.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no reason to keep any of these other guys. Get as much minor league pitching as you can. That's what today is about, if you want to get better for the future.
The other thing this weekend that it's one of those things where you're just like, what the hell are you thinking? So, you know, obviously there was the team decided not to play a Thursday night's game. That was, of course, on the heels of, you know, the Bucks canceling their game and everything that was going on. But did you see what Ryan Brazier did?
Yes.
So, listen, wherever you fall on the side of whatever your opinion is, Ryan Brazier retweeted a video that was mocking Doc Rivers for crying while talking about someone being shot. Like, what are you doing? Like, what the, I mean, I don't care if you, I don't care if you don't agree with one side politically or another side, but I mean, you're retweeting a video where you're mocking, like, first of all, a guy that's not only loved in this town, everyone loves Doc Rivers, but seems to obviously be a good guy, but he's talking about someone being shot.
Well, it was a monumental quote from Doc, the one saying, you know, we love America, but America doesn't love us. Like, that's,
but
that's a
what is Ryan Brazier thinking? Like, he retweeted that, and I'm just, and that was on top of, I mean, I read the comments by Pilar, and I'm going to, listen, I think that Pilar completely screwed up when he was talking about, you know, the standing and not the kneeling and all of that. I understand that. But I think that I'm going to give, just because I want, I'm going to give Pilar a million benefits of the doubt that he just isn't well-spoken and he didn't say things right. He since tried to clarify and apologize what he was trying to say. I will give him every benefit of the doubt. But a Ryan Brazier, like, retweeting a video mocking, like, Doc Rivers, who was getting upset about someone, is like one of the dumbest all-time moves.
Guys,
like, what are you doing?
Guys, lucky to still be a major league pitcher. And for a while last year, he wasn't. But he's another one of those, you know, handful of guys sitting out of that bullpen that belongs in the Island of Misfit Toys. If I don't know how many other rosters, how many other teams Ryan Brazier could pitch for this year other than this one. Maybe two or three other teams would have him. I mean, he's not good.
He's a fringe major league baseball
pitcher. He is lucky to be drawing a major league paycheck.
Yeah.
If I'm a guy like that, I do everything I possibly can to stay out of the public view and thank God for every day that major league paycheck comes to my door.
I just think just everything this season has been such a mess that I want it to be the messiest mess that it can be.
Oh. Yeah.
I just wanted to get, I mean, if they say, you know what news would be, like, unbelievable? If, like, around, right before the trade deadline, you saw that Xander Bogaerts got traded. Yeah. You'd be like, all right, well, that doesn't surprise me. That's everything.
No.
This team's done everything,
you know,
wrong since the beginning of all this.
Honest to God, if they trade Bogaerts, I may be out on this team for a while.
And Wallach would be mad if they traded Christian Vasquez.
Yes, that's correct.
Which they can get, like a top-tier pitcher.
Now I would, yeah. Christian Vasquez is one of the five best catchers in Major League Baseball. You don't replace a guy like that.
I don't know, man.
Finding a good Major League catcher is really, really, really difficult to do. I mean, there's no one, you'll never get back equal value. Finding a good Major League catcher, an elite Major League catcher, is almost as hard as finding a top-level starter.
I equate him with some of the things that are happening. Like, how come he can't get involved or make things a little bit better? I don't know. I know he's been having an offensive year.
I just heard of nothing. What are you blaming him for?
I wonder if he's a part of the problem at all.
How? How is he part
of
this
problem?
I thought
other catchers can help bad pitching.
Have you looked at the talent of this pitching staff?
It's not good, but he can help
Bench,
it.
Johnny Bench couldn't solve this problem.
I wouldn't say that. Johnny Bench, a hell of a catcher.
Johnny Bench.
We cannot compare Johnny Bench to Christian Vasquez, John.
I'm not.
We can't do that.
I'm saying that Bench is a Hall of Fame catcher. Ivan Rodriguez, a Hall of Fame caliber catcher. None of these guys could solve the problem.
Right.
You're running out Nathan Eovaldi, Martin Perez, and a bunch of idiots. You're telling me that a better catcher,
Jason Veritek,
make this
went through a lot
better.
Of crap too.
Hold
and made
on.
Them better.
Jason Veritek never had a pitching staff
had a hell
like this.
Of, never had.
Never had
never
a pitching
did.
Staff
I
like this.
I will give you that.
Oh my
he
God!
Never had a staff
Once
like
again, this.
This
is twice in 2 hours that you have been so wrong. It has shocked me.
No. Not so wrong. It's just how can I not? How can he? What's he done to help it? He's a, why not trade Christian Vasquez for pitching?
Vasquez
why not?
Is an elite
they just got a kid named Connor Wong.
Because
and you can
Christian
say he's a backup.
Vasquez is
but
an elite defensive
play.
Catcher who can hit. That's why you keep him.
Oh, yeah.
He actually prohibits
many catchers in the league can
stealing.
Hit these days, let me tell you.
That's
how many
my point.
Hit in the
if you have one, you keep one.
Okay. You don't trade him for pitching. Okay.
No.
The Rays want to give you two starting pitchers from their minor league system, and you don't want them.
So you're telling me.
Because you'd rather keep a 240 hitter who doesn't improve the pitching staff.
I agree with Joe on this.
Now, you're both are wrong.
I'm on Team Joe.
Oh, good. Congratulations. You're wrong, too.
Go, Joe. Go, Joe. I'm stoking the fire.
No, I'm just saying. Christian Vasquez hit 240. He hits 240.
This
Let's
year.
Keep him.
All right. How was his year last year, Joe? How did he do last year?
Let's go to baseball
Take
reference.
A look. Take a look at how
I'm
he hit
do
last
some research.
Year.
How about this?
Okay.
Let's see. Christian Vasquez.
How did he do last year?
Let's see. Let's say.
I'll wait right here.
I mean, I don't. My point is, catchers on the whole.
He's a catcher.
Catchers on the whole don't hit. And when you find a guy who's elite defensively that can hit, you keep him.
I want a hat that says that. That's he's a catcher. Who cares?
He hit 23 home runs, which is very good.
So, for a catcher, how many RBIs was his batting average?
He had 101 strikeouts. That's a lot.
No,
he had 72 RBI.
Yeah.
One triple.
Okay. Batting average was what?
But listen, they were all cheating.
Batting average was what?
276. Okay. They were all cheating.
For a catcher, that is phenomenal.
But what about this year?
He's a top five catcher.
Four home runs.
He has... Are we having a stat war? Is that what we're doing?
I do not want to trade Austin Vasquez. I don't want to trade. Unless somebody blows you away with a tremendous offer. And these two pitchers that Tampa's offering, are they like one of them a top five prospect?
I heard pitchers. That's all I heard.
Oh, I see. Could be anybody off the screen. All right.
Launch more stat missiles, please, John Wallach's way. Wallach stat grenades. I need them quick.
Seriously.
Who shall win the stat war?
I think it's obvious. It's me.
He hit 23 home runs. So what did Jackie Bradley hit last year? How many home runs did he hit?
That's completely different. It's the position. It has nothing to do with Bradley against Vasquez.
I've heard Vasquez.
No one, by the way, we're the only two people within the sound of our voices who care
about
that.
I shall give
you a commercial break to gather your stat ammo. Please. And we shall come back and you shall launch it. Then we will have a stat war. Stat battle.
I'm
right
so
here about
glad
a
we
Christian
saved this.
Vasquez.
I'm so glad we saved this for the 8 o'clock hour. This is awesome.
We're really having a Christian Vasquez stat battle.
Mom, he started it.
Would you want to reach peak sports talk radio? We have achieved it with a Christian Vasquez sports stat battle for the ages.
I want, just for the record, I was prepared not to go there, but he started this, and that's how most wars start.
That's how most wars start.
Healthy sports debate didn't hurt anyone.
All right, we have to break. We have to break.
Fine.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich. 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Like, I didn't really pay attention to it, and now I'm pissed.
Rich.
Cody dresses an ape and jump out of the bushes.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
If I'm a Sports Hub, it is Toucher and Rich, and I heard that a truce was thrown out there in the middle of the sports stats war we were just having. When it came, the Christian Vasquez sports stat war that you guys were just launching grenades on. You guys have come to a peaceful truce, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, Okay. Listen, why are we arguing about this? Just trade him.
The team. I want Christian Vasquez here, damn it. And I have the numbers to prove it.
I mean, listen, there aren't many people to get passionate about on the Red Sox right now.
You want to go F4? I'll go F4 on you. Let's go.
That was his war, by the way. He does throw 40% runners. I'll
yes.
Give him that.
Which doesn't happen
and
a lot.
He has one year left and then an option. So if you trade him, he plays for 1 year and he opts out and gets a contract somewhere else.
How do you know he goes somewhere else?
Maybe he wants a bigger contract.
Last I heard, the luxury tax is going to get reset. I got tons of money.
Well, then he's out then. They're not even going to re-sign his ass.
I see.
Might as well get two pitchers now.
This is some fantastically nerdy stuff. All right, well, no commercials, just Joe Murray with his headlines, and he will tell you why you need to get rid of Christian Vasquez
Remember Leon? Sandy Leon?
Oh, he was a much better catcher.
Oh, he was a hell of a catcher.
Oh, okay.
What was the Sox pitchers with him? No, what was their ERA with him?
He was an automatic out.
Who cares?
He was an automatic out at the bottom of the lineup.
I bet you Sandy Leon could help this.
I want you to know I had given this up. I had given it up. Do your update. We'll stop. We'll keep going.
Okay. No, it's fine.
Till 10.
No, we won't. But
darn it.
We will space it out. Maybe you can revisit this Christian Vasquez stats.
Sandy Leon, baby.
later on. And
best catcher ever.
Sometime around 9:59. Maybe we'll do that. All right, here's the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.